Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang, our series on every Thursday, sharing with you what Bhagwan has given to us in his own pen, what Bhagwan has left for us as his message, as his legacy, as the treasure that can fill us with bliss. This is what the Vahinis are. And in Vahini Satsang, every week we spend time contemplating on what Bhagwan has written. We are now in Sandeha Nivarini, the second volume after Prema Vahini. Bhagwan wrote these two volumes as series of articles in Sanatana Sarathi during 1958-59-60. Professor Kasturi later compiled these articles, and that is how we have the volumes Prema Vahini, Sandhya Nivarini, Jnana Vahini, Gita Vahini, and so on. So we are now in the second volume, Sandhya Nivarini, and in the ninth chapter of this beautiful book, which has a dialogue between Bhagwan and the devotee. Swami himself, as the devotee, asks the questions and then he gives the answers as the divine master. So let us continue from where we left off in the previous week. We are now in the second segment of chapter 9. Segment 9.2. We discussed the initial part of this segment in the previous episode. So let's listen once again to segment 9.2 and we'll move on further discussing what Bhagwan has given us in this part of chapter 9.
So Swami, we should not sit with folded hands placing all burdens on destiny, isn't it?
What is important is you should act according to your capacity and leave the result of the action to destiny. It is wrong to desist from the appropriate karma, placing reliance on destiny. If you do so, even destiny will slip out of your hands. Whoever he be, he must engage himself in karma.
Yes, yes, Swami. In the Gita also, Krishna tells Arjuna, even I do karma. The universe cannot go on if I desist from karma. And so, if you withdraw from it, how can you realize the results of your karma? Karma is Purusha Lakshana, the hallmark of men.
You are silly. Is there a different hallmark for women? Karma is Prakriti Lakshana. All beings, men or women, trees or animals, worms, insects and so on, have to do karma. Everything in the universe is bound by this law. Everything that we experience, be it favorable or unfavorable, is its result. Therefore, karma is the characteristic of Prakriti. Do not refer to it as Purusha Lakshana. Paramatma is the one and only Purusha. Prakriti is all Shakti, feminine. You are all not Purushas, remember.
But Swami, there is distinction between men and women in nature, and also in their actions and experiences. One cannot help but accept this difference. In this scenario, how can we say that all are feminine?
My boy, you may imagine it to be so, guided by your natural reason. But the reality is not that. All this is just secular experience. It is superficial and far from the fundamental truth. This is simply play acting, mere impersonation. In some plays, men take the role of women. Sometimes women enact the role of men in plays. Are they therefore men? All these are roles assumed for the drama of life. However, since Prakriti is completely suffused with femininity, all the actors, no matter what role they play, are feminine, not masculine. The genuine Purusha is only one, that is Shiva, the Atma. The Atma is immanent in everyone, but for this reason alone, all cannot be deemed masculine. The Prakriti theatre is like a girls' school where all the roles of the play are taken up by girls. Shakti, which is feminine, puts on all these parts, but do not take the drama as real, my dear fellow.
Swami, even after hearing all this, the nature of the world remains an enigma to me. When one side is seen, it strikes me as real. When the other side is presented, it strikes me as unreal. Nothing is definite.
That is exactly the nature of mithya. It means that the world is mithya. It is neither satya nor asatya. It is neither real nor unreal. You are born in mithya. You are enmeshed in it, and so you cannot distinguish this from that, the satya from the asatya.
Then, setting aside this discussion of mithya, tell me, Swami, about that satya, that Purusha, whoever he is.
The Purusha has neither birth nor death. He undergoes no change. He is Chit Swarupa and Jnana Swarupa. He is wisdom. Dharma or codes of social conduct are not of his nature. So he is not Dharma Swarupa. The Jnana, which is his nature, does not change, is not corrected or supplemented from time to time. It is eternal wisdom. Light is its nature, and so it does not admit a dot of darkness. The sun does not have effulgence added to it from the world it illumines. It will emit splendor whether there are worlds or not. Similarly, the innate nature never changes. The Purusha is self-luminous. He is always the object of knowledge. He cognizes all vrittis or mutations of the chitta or consciousness. The chitta is parinami. It changes and evolves. But the Purusha is modificationless, aparinami, unevolved. The Purusha is wisdom itself, which never changes. No vyapara or activity can affect him. Even when unmanifested, effulgence is his nature. The seed in the soil is the unmanifested form of the tree. The tree is the manifested form of the seed. This change from the seed to tree and tree to seed shows that activity of the Shakti in the seed. This is Parinama. But the Purusha is unchanging, unaffected. He is the seer. He is completely apart from Prakriti. No deed can diminish his glory nor exhaust his personality.
So that is segment 9.2. And in the previous episode, we spent some time in the first two paragraphs of segment 9.2, where Bhagwan is saying that it is wrong to desist from karma, placing reliance on destiny. And Swami gives the example of himself, wherein Lord Krishna says, even I do work. When I myself are engaged in so many activities, even though there is no obligation for me to act, how can you not act? That's how Krishna tells Arjuna. And that is what we contemplated upon in the previous episode of Vahini Satsang. Moving further in this 9.2 segment of Sandhya Nivarini, when the Bhakta says that, so Swami, karma is Purusha Lakshana, doing activity is the hallmark of men, and that is when Swami corrects him and says, no, it is not just men. Being engaged in activity is the hallmark of nature itself. It is not just men or women. Karma is Prakriti Lakshana. Lakshana means the nature. The nature of creation is to be engaged in activity. Everything in the universe is bound by this law, Swami says. And whatever we experience is the result of this activity. And so, Bhagwan emphasizes and says that don't say it is Purusha Lakshana, don't say it is something which is unique to men. And then Bhagwan goes on to say, who is truly a man? In Sanskrit, Purusha means man and Stri means woman. But Swami says, the only person who can be called a Purusha is the divine. Everybody else is feminine. And when the Bhakta says, no Swami, but you know, there are men, there are women. In nature we have masculine and feminine characteristics and forms. That is where Swami says, no, 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 that is just secular experience. That is very, very superficial. That is not the truth. The truth is something else. And Bhagwan says, what you see in nature is only femininity, which is donning the role of men. Because Prakriti, nature, is suffused with femininity alone. Everybody is truly, intrinsically only feminine. There is nobody who is masculine. There is only one in the universe who can be truly called masculine, who is truly Purusha. Bhagavan says. In fact, if we read the summer course, Discourses of Bhagavan, delivered in 1972, Bhagwan explains this. Swami says, a youngster once asked, how does creation go on? In reply, Bhagwan said, I want to ask you a question. You tell me, how do you get a dream? And Swami says, for getting a dream, the cause is your sleep, isn't it? If you do not sleep, you will not get a dream. There is no way you can dream if you don't sleep. Just as for a dream, the sleep is the cause, Swami said, for creation, the cause is Maya. And Maya has no beginning, no end. This creation, the world that we see around us, it is related to Maya. And Swami says, Maya always loves the soul. Maya always loves the Purusha. Maya always wants to be with God. It wants to reach God. And that is the reason why creation always wants to be with the Creator. In the material world, although many shapes come about, and although we may have a distinction between men and women with many different names, Swami said, all this distinction can be made in Prakriti, in nature, but in Purusha, in the one supreme principle, there is no distinction. And then Bhagwan gives the example of the girls in the Anantapur College, and explains further, saying, when on a college day function, you have a drama in the Anandpur College, which is meant for girls. In the drama, you will find that one girl plays the role of a king, a Maharaja. Another girl acts the part of a queen, a Maharani. Now, the one who puts on the part of a king, that girl has a mustache and puts on a dhoti, he has a crown, and he has all those insignia that are part of the attire of the king. Swami says, while the audience is forming the idea that one girl is looking like a Maharaja and that other girl is looking like a Maharani, the girl who has put on the role of the Maharaja, she always thinks that she is a girl. And she always knows that she belongs to the girls' college. She'll never think that she is masculine, that she is a Maharaja. That is how Bhagwan says the world is actually a girls' college. Here in this world, in this drama of our life, in the stage that is the world, different people put on many appearances. Just because you put on a part, you play a role, you cannot become that role. You're just playing a role. Because everybody, Swami says, is same when it comes to the five elements, the five koshas and the five tattvas. All the people are equal. Swami says, when you talk of manhood, what you have to regard as man, as Purusha, is the strength, the energy of the Purusha. The strength that is there in you, that is what you can call it as masculinity, as Purusha. But otherwise, everybody is feminine. In fact, it is a combination of the soul, the Purusha, and Prakriti, the world of matter, that creation continues. And for this creation, there has to be someone who is responsible. If there is mud in the tank, and if we are seeing water in the river, water alone from the river will not enable us to make a pot or a pan. The mud alone from the tank will not enable us to make a pot or a pan. It is the combination of the water and mud that will facilitate you to create either a pot or a pan. Swami gives this example and says, it is the combination of water and mud with the help of someone who combines it. Without the potter, even if there is water, even if there is mud, you cannot make a pot. And that potter is God, Swami says. The energy, the power is the water. The nature is the mud. The combination of these two is the result, which is creation. And Swami says, all these pots and pans, they will break one day or the other. And that is the reason why all human bodies, like pots and pans, which have been constructed, we have been created in time, will also be destroyed in time. You cannot prevent it. Swami says, immersed in our ignorance, we feel that these pots are ours, these pans are ours. We are not able to understand what is the significance of these pots or pans, or what energizes them, or who made these pots and pans. And that is the reason why Swami is saying all this is secular experience. It is superficial. It is not the fundamental truth what you see around you. Guided by natural reason, you think like that, but that is not the reality. The reality is everybody is just putting on a role. Everybody is feminine. In fact, during the summer course discourse of 1991, 29th of May, Bhagwan explained this concept of Purusha. He said, who is a Purusha? Who is a man? It is not someone who wears the dress of a man, trousers and a coat. Someone said, this body is Pura. The body is called a Pura. The divine consciousness which pervades the entire body from head to foot is Purusha. The consciousness within is the Purusha. The individual who experiences this consciousness and manifests one's individuality is Purusha. So the person who connects with this consciousness and manifests this divinity, he is Purusha. And Swami says, this divine power which pervades the entire cosmos also shines in everything. So this individual has the Purusha within. The power within this individual is the Purusha. And the same Purusha, this power in this cosmic manifestation is Purushottama. When that power is there in us, it is that principle within us which is Purusha. And it is there in everyone. It's not there only in men or women. Everybody is energized by this strength, by this power. And this power in its cosmic form is called Purushottama. And Swami says, since you have this power within, what are the duties that you should do to sanctify your life? Your life. And here Bhagavan says, you should develop the awareness that the five elements, ether, air, fire, water, earth, they are all divine entities and they have to be utilized appropriately in that spirit. Every person has five organs of perception to make use of these elements. Seeing, the power of sight, Swami says, is based on tejas. The power of tejas should be put to proper use. It should never be misused. See only what is good. Only then tejas is utilized as a divine potency. Swami says, next comes shabda or hearing. The ears have to be used only for listening to sacred words and thereby seek the divine. The faculty of hearing should not be used for unworthy purposes. Swami goes on to tell about the faculty of smell. Foul smells cause illness. Fragrance in the air, that is the divine manifestation. That is how we should utilize the sense organ. That will improve our health. And when it comes to skin, Swami says, you should avoid contact with all and sundry. Sparsha, the faculty of touch or sparsha, is very, very sacred. In fact, Swami says the sages and saints used to live in isolation because they did not want to be contaminated. There is a divine power in the human body which is called Chit Shakti, the energy consciousness. It is like electric current, Bhagavan says. When one body touches another, there is exchange of energy. And in this process, there is a likelihood of one's good qualities going out and an inflow of bad qualities from another coming in. And it is because of this that we have this practice of touching the sacred feet of the pious and the good, because that will enable us to get rid of our bad qualities and acquire good qualities from them. Swami says, when you are meditating, there should be absolutely no physical contact between people. Each one should sit apart and experience the presence of the indwelling spirit. In fact, the consciousness of one's divine nature gets weakened if our contacts are not pure. The sages of yore could rise to divine heights by making use of their sense organs, by making proper use of this power, this Purusha that is there in us. Bhagavan talks about pancha pranas, the five life breaths. Swami says there are 12 crores of nerves in the human body. The life breath, vyana, pervades the entire nervous system. It is because of the pervading presence of this divine vital air in all the nerves that the health of the body is maintained. And this is what contributes to our happiness. In fact, the presence of this vital air, vyana, in the sahasrara, the thousand petal head of the kundalini, which is there in the brain, that is what accounts for the intelligence in man. When the kundalini shakti rises from the muladhara, that is at the bottom of the spinal column, to sahasrara at the top of the brain, that is the blossoming of this purusha, blossoming of the power in man. Then the kundalini shakti shines effulgently. In fact, man has been subject to numerous troubles because man has lost this power. Lost to recognize this power. Lost to utilize this power. Lost to harness this power. The sages were able to do this and they used it for great purposes. And that's why Bhagavan says we have to utilize this purusha within. Only then we can truly become a purusha. But who is truly a purusha? Swami says the one who has all the 16 potencies, he is the Purushottama, the supreme person. And this Purushottama title is always given only to divine manifestations, only to avatars. Why? Because they utilize all the 16 potencies for the benefit of others, only for others' benefit. Whatever they say or do is totally free from any taint of selfish interest or self-interest. Bhagavan says, no avatar, whether in India or elsewhere, has ever used the five elements, the five senses, the five vital airs for any selfish purpose. All the 16 potencies, five elements, the five senses, the five panchapranas and the mind are utilized only for selfless purpose. And that is why the avatar is called Purushottama. In all their actions, they demonstrate this purity, this unchanging truth, Bhagavan says. Unfortunately, common people do not recognize this. They don't understand what is true humanness, what is to have that energy, that purusha in, within them. On the Sankranti day, 1985, 14th of January, Bhagavan said, people do not understand the true significance of this purusharthas. We say that for every man, there are four purusharthas. There are four goals for every human life. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Generally we think purusha is man and so every man has these four goals. So first Bhagavan says, no, there is only one man. Everybody is feminine. And then Bhagavan says, the purusha principle, that energy that is there in you, what is the goal of every individual who has that power within, that purusha within? And those goals are not worldly goals. They are not wealth, desire, artha, kama. Bhagavan says all of them are spiritual goals. The foremost purpose of the four purusharthas, Swami says, is to make man realize that his primary duty is to divinize himself. Again, Bhagavan asserts in that discourse, purusha does not signify the masculine gender as it is commonly assumed. What is purusha? It is the Atma. It is the supreme consciousness which has no gender, which is immanent in all beings. Purusha is the indweller. Swami says, the scriptures have declared that the body is gross and the Atma is Chaitanya. It is consciousness. So the body is feminine. Only the Atma is masculine. So every being is made up of both the elements. And every being, therefore, has to pursue the Purusharthas. The goals of human life are not just for men. These Purusharthas are for every being, for every person, no matter what your gender is. In fact, this reminds me of very, very enlightened woman of ancient India who followed these Purusharthas. The woman who followed these Purusharthas and demonstrated what it is to achieve the spiritual goals of life. There is Queen Chudala, a story which is recounted in Yoga Vasishta, which is a riveting conversation between Brahmarshi Vasishta and Sri Rama, Lord Sri Rama, a beautiful and accomplished queen. Queen Chudala, she dearly loved her husband. And even as she was executing her wifely and royal duties, she reached very advanced levels of realization and she acquired many yogic siddhis, many yogic powers because of her sadhana. The progress in a spiritual journey. She understood and accepted that her husband, even though a ruler with great expertise, somehow was lagging behind in spiritual evolution. She realized that her maturity shone not just in her acceptance, but also in her willingness to let her husband adopt a circuitous and perilous route to self-realization. She realized her husband is not yet there, but she thought, I should let him come to that realization. I should facilitate that process. And I should allow him to learn that lesson in the way he can imbibe it the best. He should get it from his own experience. So it so happened that the king said, I want to renounce this kingdom and the riches. I want to go back to the forest. I want to lead a secluded life of privation. I want to do penance. I want realization. And the queen allows the king to go ahead and says, okay, king, if you want to pursue your spiritual goal in isolation, you may proceed. And she takes upon herself the responsibility of the forsaken kingdom. And she rules the kingdom very wisely for 18 long years. 18 long years. Sacrifice does not imply renouncing of positions or responsibilities. It is renouncing ignorance and attachment. She had learned this, but she wanted her husband to learn it through his own experience. She wanted her husband to experience the futility of false renunciation. And she waited. She waited till she felt her husband was ready for the message. And she thought that maybe it is now time for me to go and speak to my husband. But if I speak as his wife, maybe he may not value the message. So she takes the form of a young Brahmin boy and she engages in a long, patient conversation with the king, who has now renounced. She enlightens him that the positions, the relationships, the roles and the forms do not constitute the identity that define egoism, and that true renunciation involves the detachment from the false self. Detachment not from the positions, detachment from the false self, false identification. And she tells the story of the philosopher's stone. There was a man who always wanted the philosopher's stone. And after a long quest, the philosopher's stone was within his reach. But somehow he doubted the authenticity of that stone. He thought, how can the philosopher's stone, which can convert anything into gold, be available so easily? No, no, it cannot be. And so he does not reach out. And that stone vanishes. Much later, after a lot of arduous pacts, he finds another glossy bauble. He finds something which shines, and he thinks that it is philosopher's stone. What truly happened was, this searcher after the philosopher's stone, he undoubtedly was acquainted with the science, but he had no knowledge of the truth. He searched that gem, but he knew not what the gem was. And that is the reason why he missed it. And the queen was trying to tell the king, the queen in the form of that young Brahmin boy, was telling the king that the precious gem of renunciation, you allowed it to slip from your hand, and you now you are trying to gather something which is not as valuable at all. You're trying to do some austerity, and you're holding on to some gems which are not valuable at all. When the king's intellect was molded into receptive humility, when the king started doing honest introspection, then Queen Chudala laboriously starts teaching the king that if you cast away these positions or these roles or the responsibilities, it is like lopping off the branches of the tree. Instead of burning away the root of ignorance with the fire of relentless self-inquiry, the young Brahmin boy tells the king, "O prince, the fire which is able to consume the seed of the noxious plant of the mind is the expostulation of the question, what am I that bear this corporeal form upon me?" You have to ask, who is this person who is having this form? Who am I who truly has assumed this form, this body? And what is it that I need to renounce? What is it that truly belongs to me that I need to renounce? The Queen Chudala, who had attained high level of spiritual understanding and realization, gave time for the spiritual experience to mature in her husband, and at the right time instructed him into what is true renunciation. And even as the king was going through the process, she handled all the responsibilities of the kingdom for 18 years. she was pursuing that purushartha of moksha and helping others attain that purushartha of moksha. She was feminine, but truly, like every person in the world should be doing, she utilized the Purusha principle within to attain the Purushartha, which is moksha. And there are so many such women in our ancient Indian spiritual tradition. You have Ubhaya Bharati, the wife of Mandana Mishra, who was so respected for her wisdom and impartiality. So impartial she was that she was appointed as the judge in the philosophical debate between her husband and the great Sri Adi Shankaracharya. And when Ubhaya Bharati declared her husband's defeat, he took to sannyas as per the terms. Husband took to becoming a renunciant, and she, as the dutiful wife of the husband, followed suit. Once, while on a walk with her disciples, she chanced upon a mendicant resting with a dried bottle gourd under his head. And Ubhaya Bharati saw this renunciant's attachment to this bottle gourd, and she told her disciples, "Look, this man calls himself a renunciant. He's supposed to have renounced everything, but he's attached to a bottle gourd. And he's keeping it under his head as a pillow." And the renunciant heard this comment, but he did not say anything. When Ubhaya Bharati and her disciples were returning from the river, this renunciant threw away that bottle gourd in front of them to demonstrate that he was not attached to it. And when Ubhaya Bharati saw that action, she remarked, "Now, I thought there was only one defect in him, namely attachment. Now I realize that he has another defect. He has ahankara, he has ego. How can one with attachment and ego become a wise person and a renunciant?" The renunciant left the place, having learned the lesson, the priceless lesson. Detachment requires the renunciation of external validation. If you are sure of your detachment, you don't need external validation for it. There were such powerful women who were truly on the path of attaining the purusharthas of life. And Swami says these purusharthas are for men and women. They are for everyone, because everyone is actually truly only feminine. The one who can utilize the purusha principle within completely, fully, just like avatars. Avatars utilize every faculty only for selfless work, then you become Purusha, you become one, you become like the Purusha, the one principle. Bhagwan goes on to explain the true meaning of Purusharthas. And Swami says, many times people think dharma is to do actions like charity or following the ashrama dharma. So I am a brahmacharya, I am a grihastha, I am a householder, I am a sannyas, I am a renunciant, doing whatever duties I am supposed to do. Okay, I am supposed to go on pilgrimages, I am supposed to do good acts. Swami says, all these are only external actions. The true dharma of every human being is to make every endeavor to realize the divine. That is the only dharma of every human being. The process by which one realizes the divine, that consummation, that alone can be called as dharma. Swami says all these duties relating to different stages of man's life, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasa, all these are incidental to the particular stage in life. These duties are not dharma. Dharma means activities that lead to self-realization. Similarly, artha, money, wealth, it is not the accumulation of property and positions. Some say that can lead to anartha, it can lead to calamitous situations. And these kind of wealth are not lasting. The accusation of real wealth that man should acquire is the wisdom that is related to the divine. That alone is true artha. And kama. Kama is not worldly desires and sensual pleasures. Kama is that which relates to the yearning for God, not for mundane desires. That is the purusharta that every person should strive to pursue. And moksha. Moksha, many people think moksha means we have to reach heaven. Swami says, even if you reach heaven, you can be there only for a certain period of time. As long as your merits last, once your merits are exhausted, you will come back. You will be reborn again. Moksha, in the true sense, refers to a state in which nothing is lacking and there is no incoming or going out. It is a state without name and form. It is not a specific place to go to. It is the attainment of unity with the divine. That is what is moksha, Swami says. Completely merge with the Supreme Consciousness. Pursuing the Purusharthas, you become the Purusha. Because you have completely utilized the Purusha, the power principle within. And this is what Swami is telling in this segment 2.9.2. The genuine Purusha is only one. And that is the Atma. Everything else is just secular experience. All these differences that you think, men, women, it is all superficial. That is not the fundamental truth. In the Gita Vahini, Bhagavan says, there are some people who give up the goals of human life, who give up the pursuit of these dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And they say that they are in sadhana. Swami says that is only laziness. How can someone who is on the path of sloth ever be happy? Only the wise are content. The ignorance can never attain. The ignorant can never attain that contentment. Wise people are not bothered with the dualities of joy and grief, victory and defeat, gain and loss. They are beyond duality. They never allow hatred to affect them. Both the embodiment, the swarupa and the swabhava, the innate nature of the Atma guarantee that it is unaffected. The Atma is unaffected. It is unattached. It is uninfluenced by anything. That is not Atma. It has neither birth nor death, nor hunger nor thirst, nor grief nor delusion. This is what Krishna tells Arjuna. Hunger and thirst are qualities of life. Birth and death are characteristics of the body. Grief and delusion are afflictions of the mind. O Arjuna, know yourself as the Atma. Give up all the delusion and become unattached. Be like the lotus leaf in the marshy lake of change. Do not get smeared with the mud around you. That is the sign of detachment. You are in it, yet outside it. Be like the lotus leaf, not like the porous blotting paper that gets tainted with whatever it comes in contact with. The Atma which is there within, that is the Linga, the Atma Linga, the Abhishekam that you need to do for this Atma which is there is the pure water of your mental impulses, your pure thoughts. Your mind cannot move in one direction and senses cannot move in another direction. When you do such a abhisheka, when you recognize the Atma within and do abhishekam of this Atma with the pure waters of your sublime impulses, Swami says, then whatever you do becomes a yajna. Whatever you do becomes a sacrifice. Whatever you speak becomes a holy mantra. Whatever you plant, wherever you place your feet, that place becomes holy. Because you become almost like a complete reflection of the Purushottama. Because you have utilized the Purusha principle within. And this is what Bhagwan is telling in this 9.2. Every person has to act, and karma is not just Purusha Lakshana. To act is the duty of every person, no matter what the person's gender is. And Bhagwan goes on to explain that everything in the nature is feminine. The only person who is masculine is Shiva, the Atma. And this Atma is there in everyone. Just because the Atma is there within you, you cannot think that you are masculine. The Atma principle is there within you. Only when you utilize it, only when you harness it, only when you use the 5 organs, the 10 organs, every moment of your day, selflessly, just like the avatars do, divine incarnations, the prophets do, then you can become Purusha. Then you can become like the Purushottama. Otherwise, everybody is feminine in this world. Swami says, don't take this drama as real. Everybody is only acting in this world, and they are all females who are putting on different roles. This is all a drama, just like a drama that you would see in a girl's college. No girl thinks that she has become a boy just because she's playing the role of a king. That realization is very important for every person in the world, even as we discharge our responsibilities and our duties. So Bhagwan says that nobody is exempt from action. Everybody has to act because the divine himself acts. And even as you act, recognize that you have to act in a sacred manner, because you have to utilize the energy within, the power within, in a sacred way to attain the purusharthas, the goals of human life. And only those activities that you do in that direction are activities which can be told, which can be considered as dharma. So dear listeners, we'll continue this. There is a lot more that Bhagwan has explained in this segment 9.2. I'm not sure if I have communicated everything that Bhagwan has mentioned. Definitely what I have communicated is a speck of what Bhagwan has mentioned, because as we read and reread and do shravanam mananam nididhyasanam, as Bhagwan says, we get better understanding. Even then, that's only an intellectual understanding. Only when we try and practice, only then we can truly experience this. Many of us probably know many of these things intellectually. It is good to at least know them intellectually to begin with. But just like it took 18 years for that king to be ripe enough for King Chudala to come to him and explain what is renunciation. I think for worldly matters, to get a degree, to earn little money, we put so much effort. But this is eternal wealth and it needs much more intensity of sadhana, concentration and effort. But what we will get out of it is something that the world can never give us. So let's put our efforts in this direction. And God loves us if we put efforts in this direction, because He's so happy that we are putting effort in the right direction. And He is there to hold our hands. He's waiting to help us when we put our efforts in this direction. So let's pray to Bhagwan. And as we read these messages of Bhagwan, let's see what is it that we can practice. And let us put our sincere efforts in this direction. And we will experience Bhagwan's grace, His support, His indomitable courage, which will fill us and energize us. As always, if you have any queries or comments, you can write to listener@dedisai.org. You can also send your messages on our WhatsApp number 9393258258. Offering my gratitude to Bhagwan for this opportunity to share a few thoughts on Sandhya Nivarini, and praying that as time goes, we understand these better and live this in our lives. I take your leave. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.